On the show today, we have Kina Mitchell Group's very own Jeff Dillon talking about consumer behavior wrapped around digital and how credit unions can capitalize on this. Really, really good stuff here from Jeff, so check it out. Hey everybody, Mike Lawson here with CU Broadcast. Welcome to our show. And on today's program, we have Kina Mutual Group's very own Jeff Dillon. Jeff, how are you, sir?
I am doing well. I'm fighting through some of our fun northern weather, but other than that, it's nice and toasty on the inside.
Right on. That's the way it should be. Yeah, hang in there with that weather. Spring is right around the corner, sir, although I hear. So, but hang in there. You guys are doing great. Hey, let's talk about something really cool here that I always find super fascinating, and you as well, I'm sure, is consumer behavior revolving around digital, and something that we experienced all too well last year, and it continues into this year, and how credit unions are capitalizing on it. And so I'm going to pose the first question here to you, Jeff. Economic and environmental factors are combining to create financial pressure for credit unions. What are some of the ways that this pressure is changing credit unions' business model today?
I think a lot of credit unions right now are facing this pressure, I think, from four different directions.
Yeah.
You know, you can look at the low interest rate environment that's tightening margins significantly. You know, we can talk about the decline in interchange income. We can think a little bit about the slowing of mortgage, volume as we've come off those previous refi highs.
Yep.
But then we also have kind of the consumer economic aspect of member income is at risk in ways that it hasn't been for a little while. So I think those four things combined, in addition to all of the behavioral changes you're seeing just from the pandemic in general, to put pressure on the credit unions to reevaluate, I think, what are we trying to accomplish with our members? What are our members expecting of us? And how are we going to meet those expectations? In many ways, this is the latest flavor of change. But a lot of this change has been coming for quite some time. If you look in mortgages or credit cards, this digital evolution has been coming on for, you could say 10 years, 15 years fairly easily. And I think there's pockets of the market that's been able to move a little bit more slowly into that change. And I think we experienced in the last year that those pockets that were able to get away with moving a little bit more cautiously or more slowly previously, they're getting that kick right now to get on board, because maybe members that previously still would have liked some of those services but weren't overly frustrated by the lack of their availability, they're feeling it now. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the big pivot that's coming right now, that the pockets that have been able to wait in the past, they're paying for that wait right now, and it's going to be an interesting move getting out of that.
Yeah, talk about pressure. If you haven't acted by now, the pressure is really mounting. And having said that, so where would you suggest credit union leaders focus or even refocus their strategy, maybe in the short term and then even in the long term?
So I think long term things don't change.
Okay.
I think the advantage that credit unions have had historically is the same advantage they have today.
Mm-hmm.
Credit unions were built to serve their members' needs. That was part of their core mission from day one. And I think that remains, the long-term strategy of stay focused on the needs of our members. The piece of it that in the short term, I think there's certainly a pop in the need of our members being more digitally than some places that had been previously.
Right.
So short term, it's going to be, what are those gaps that you have that you need to fill, and you fill them in a hurry?
Mm-hmm.
But also, what are those spots that you're winning that you really want to start doubling down on? And so when I think about short term, it's what are those gaps? What are those wins you want to double down on? Long term, I don't know that people are going to go back to our pre-pandemic usage of digital tools and tactics. The things people have gotten used to, they've gotten convenient. I think it's going to stick. So I'm sure, getting well outside of my sphere here, I have to imagine the real estate game is going to get very different about commercial real estate and branch footprints and that sort of thing. But digital, there's going to be some people that start using it less. I'd be very surprised if there was a lot of members that stopped using it at all, though.
Yeah, I think they discovered how convenient and how easy it is, and even secure it is. And so that is, all those three together are very reassuring that, yeah, I think you're right. You're not going to see a huge drop off. Again, there will be always be those traditionalists who will want to stick with the traditional service, which is fine, which is fine. But man, I think you're right. The digitals can continue to have somewhat an upward trajectory for sure. And having, go ahead. Did you want to add on?
I was just saying, I think that's a key piece. And, one of the risks I do think that is we'll face leaders as they're making decisions is perhaps oversteering into some of these trends where we all start talking a lot about digital first, right? And we need to be any number of different credit unions. I guarantee you there's conversations happening in their boardroom about what is it, how do we become a digital first, you know, company? You know, and the idea of digital first, I think sometimes people mistake that for meaning digital only. Mm-hmm. And digital first is powered by choice. Right. And so I do think that it remains critical that we continue to give members the experience they want in the channels that they want them. Right. If you want to do it online, great. We want you to have a seamless experience there online. You want to walk into the branch and cash your paycheck every other Friday? Great. We need to continue to be able to do that for you. Mm-hmm. Maybe the ways that we do it have to change in order to, you know, recognize the financial realities of the modern market. But we still have to continue to give those choice to people. Yeah. So I do think that as much as it's going to be digital is critical, digital first is a nice way to think about things. Mm-hmm. But digital only, I think we can all remember back in the early 2000s, airlines hiding phone numbers on their websites, right? I don't think anybody's going back to digital only. Hopefully we all learned our lesson pretty well there.
Agree. Yeah. Yeah. I like your pendulum analogy. I think that's so, so spot on because you can go way too far in that direction and then you'll lose people, you know? So I think the opportune word here is balance, you know, have some sort of balanced service offering, but obviously, digital is so, so important, but you know, that other stuff remains as well. So, and having said that though, the pandemic obviously forced many members to find ways to bank and shop and interact. And we were talking about that before the recording, all the new online stuff we were using now. So what is necessary to happen for credit unions to survive, not only survive, but to even thrive in a post-pandemic environment?
I think it's, we could probably pivot right off of the idea of what does it mean for digital first and how do we, you know, blend digital choice in this to give members the experience that they want. Yeah. Understanding where we're not meeting their expectations to me has always been step one. You know, step one is figuring out where are we today? You know, what are people trying to do that we're making difficult? Mm-hmm. What are things people are trying to do that we're not doing for them at all? And once you've started establishing these different things that you're trying to accomplish, you can then start pivoting into the conversation around what do we need to build? Mm-hmm. I think so often people start from, what do we need to build? Well, first you got to decide, what do you want to do? And so starting from that question of what are we trying to accomplish? What are we trying to, you know, to deliver to our members to allow them, you know, to do the things that they're looking to do. I think the next piece is people are going to run into, there are inevitably going to be demands to build more than you have either budget or resources to do. Mm-hmm. And places where maybe in the past, in the spirit of getting a fast start, maybe we've been willing to take on a little bit more throwaway work. Maybe we've been willing to eat a little bit more tech debt. Maybe we've been willing to focus a little bit more on the first use case of a capability. But I think now when you're going to have this competition of so many things that you want to do with a limited number of resources, we probably don't have that luxury right now. Yeah. So taking that extra step and looking beyond the first use case of what you're mm-hmm. trying to build, thinking about who else in my organization might be using this later, fighting the urge to cut corners to get that first use case out the door, in a way that passes on the cost of the enhancement to the next person, mm-hmm. you know, that's trying to build something. And so planning a little bit more carefully. Yeah. We talk a little bit about digital first, you know, in our organization, that you don't build your way to being digital first. You plan your way and you get thoughtful in your architecture. That's the way that you move to digital first. Mm-hmm. And giving teams the freedom to push a little bit on some of the either timelines or budget constraints when they see a moment that, you know, if one of your architecture leads comes to you and says, hey, if you could give me another 2 weeks, here's all the different things I could do to enable this for future use differently. Okay. You've got to give them a little bit of that freedom and set the expectation that they should be asking you that. your business leaders who are running these projects, giving them a little bit more authority to accept that extra cost of either budget or delay. Mm-hmm. So you can build a little more flexibly than would have been the case otherwise. And again, we talked about the pendulum before. There's the similar pendulum on this one, because that very quickly can turn into this endless scope expansion of building in all this flexibility for things that you've no idea if you're ever going to use them. So even building a little discipline into the flexibility around, thinking of a few different considerations. So I look at it as when somebody says we'd like a little bit more time or money to build something, you know, that's more future flexible. Mm-hmm. I like to understand how much extra. Are we talking about 2 weeks? Or are we talking about 2 months? We'll be having very different conversations depending on the answer. How certain is the next use? If you can point to the next use, it's really easy to say yes. Mm-hmm. If you can point generally to the types of things that might apply to the next use, okay, we're still pretty good. If we're playing pure what-if games, it gets a little bit harder to justify the cost. Yeah. And I do think that the final piece, though, is pushing on your IT peers to, and your architecture peers to help you understand, is this one of those things that if we don't build it now, is massively disruptive to try to build it, go back and build it later? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the old bathroom analogy, right? You don't have to install the fixtures, but it's a real mess if you have to like go and repipe things later on. Yep. So thinking about that as you're trying to build flexibly, because once you start building flexibly, now you have the opportunity to do trials differently than you would have in the past. Mm-hmm. You know, you think about what do our members need? Somebody might tell you they need a thing. You might think somebody needs a thing. Well, it's wonderful to be able to prototype it, get it out into market, get some actual member feedback on how you delivered against their needs before you go through a massive build cycle. And if you haven't built your infrastructure flexibly, you know, building that prototype is going to take a long time. Mm-hmm. It's going to be expensive. It's going to have a huge opportunity cost, and it's going to have a lot of risk if you're wrong. Yeah. So making it easy to try new things, I think, is a big part of testing into what our members expect from us going forward.
Yeah. And the last thing you want to do is be in a hurry building it too. Yeah. So it's like, because it seemed like last year we were in a hurry the entire year. This year, it seems like we can actually take a breath and go, okay, is this something we want to do? Is this something we want to plan for? So yeah, totally get it. Oh, good stuff here. Anything else to add here, Jeff? I mean, I know you're short on time, so I want to.
No. It's we're doing okay. I think the other piece of it that plays in here is how's your organization set up? Mm-hmm. You know, I talk about, you know, being flexible. It's very easy for you to know your needs. It's a lot harder for you to know somebody else's needs. It's even harder for somebody else to know what you're doing well enough to ask you a question about their needs. I always use our website example. You know, there's any number of different departments that are impacted by choices we make on how we build things out on our website. And one of the expectations we have is the person who was responsible for the website, it's their job to stay very close to the various different departments and help them understand what's possible. It's not everybody else's job to understand what's possible on the website. Right. You know, they're smart folks they're going to know what to ask the second time. It's not fair to expect them to know to ask unknown questions the first time. So how are you setting up your organization to ensure those conversations are happening, mm-hmm. to allow opportunity, challenges and capabilities to kind of merge together without there having to be too much structure forcing a conversation about a topic nobody knows that they need to have?
No doubt. All right, before you go, I want to know, what's the big lesson here right now? What Creightons need to do? What's the big lesson here from this talk? To sum it up.
Big lesson here is, I think, stay focused on experience, stay focused on the member, understand where we're serving them well, and let's go do more. Understand where we're failing them so we can go fill those holes, and be disciplined about not chasing some of these newer ideas that might feel fun to pursue right now, or you might see it out, the shiny object out in the market. But simple questions of if you can't specifically, you know, articulate the answers to what are you trying to accomplish? How are you going to know if it's working? And how will you know what to change? Yeah. If you can't answer those three questions, you're probably not ready to start.
Good stuff. All right, Jeff, thank you so much. This is great, great stuff. Glad we had you on today, because I think this is a very timely message for not just credit, for a lot of folks out there. I think in other industries as well. But we're talking credit unions here, and they need to adhere to that. So good stuff for sure. Thanks again, Jeff. Appreciate the time. Keep up the good work.
Okay? Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Mike, always fun to talk.
Indeed.